Welcome to the Brilliant Black Man Show, created to bring to light the success stories of black men all around the world. It is the mission and goal of Melissa Johnson to share these incredible, talented, and successful men with viewers across the country. Wake up, America, and listen to the interviews of these strong black men who are making a difference in their family, community, boardroom, and the world. They are building empires and leaving a legacy. Their life story and success matters, and it's Melissa's goal to change the narrative of how the black man is portrayed in the media, streets, home, workplace, and beyond. Join Melissa on a journey to bring awareness to the brilliance of the black man on the Transformation Network. Follow the interviews as these men speak on the importance of entrepreneurship, education, financial literacy, legacy building, and building black businesses within their communities. Now, here is your host.
Hi, this is Melissa Johnson, and welcome to the Brilliant Black Man Show on the Transformation Talk Radio. We are live with the one and only Mr. Bone Jabs, Buff Diller. He is my special guest today, and we would like to welcome Buff Diller to the show. Welcome, Buff.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And we would like to also welcome our studio audience. We are live today with the live studio audience, and we are so excited. I am so excited to interview Buff on today. I am so proud to share the man, the music, and the ministry. We have so much to talk about. Let's get started. Are you ready, Buff?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. We want to talk about the man. This man is a husband of 13 years. This man is a father of four. This man is a grandfather. His original name, his birth name, is not Buff Diller. Can you share a little bit about your birth name and how did Buff Diller become your stage name?
My birth name is Buff Diller. No, I'm just playing. I was actually named after my father, Henry Franklin Diller I. I am the second. From birth, my mom named me Buffy.
Buffy.
So back then, you couldn't figure out the gender and all that kind of good stuff. And they were thinking that I was a girl. And my mom was a fan of Family Affair. Mm-hmm. Buffy and Jody, Mr. French. Yeah, y'all remember them. And so she just named me after that little girl for some reason before I was here. When I was born, she kept the name. We dropped the Y in about 16, 15, and it became Buff. No one has ever called me Henry, not even in my household, because my mom would get it confused mm-hmm. with my dad. Mm-hmm. But when I started in the music industry, mm-hmm. Different artists would put me in the credits as Henry Buff Diller. And so when I went solo and started Bone Jazz Productions and Buff Diller Music, I just dropped the Henry altogether. It was called Buff Diller. That's where Buff Diller came from.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about the man. Let's talk about a little bit about the man, Buff. We're going to go back to your mentor. We're going to go back to your father. And I know how you feel about your father, and anyone know how you feel about your father. And I know when I did the pre-interview with you, you mentioned something to me about making him proud. And you also said that before he left, you know he was proud. Can you talk a little bit why that was so important to you to make him proud, and what exactly did you want to do to make him proud?
I knew he was going to jerk at me. It was important to me because I'm the only boy. Mm-hmm. I'm the only boy. I have three sisters and a foster sister. Mm-hmm. So I was around the ladies all the time, and I was the protector, this and the other. The only thing dad would ever say as he traveled, mm-hmm. Take care of the girls. Mm-hmm. I'll be back and take care of the girls. So that was my responsibility, to take care of the house. I was at a young age, right? So I always just wanted to make him proud as his only son. Mm-hmm. man, the only boy in the family. He was an outstanding musician. And that's the legacy that I have pursued, not by choice. Tried to step out of it a few times and just called me right back. Or they just called me right back in the bands. And so it seemed like it's a charge. It's a passion, but it's a charge. It's my destiny. And I just wanted to make him proud that he had a son that was able to, you know, take the legacy and push it forward. And for a long time, I didn't know. He spent so much time in church. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later, but he spent so much time in church and traveling that we never got a chance to really talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I guess the first time was about 10 years ago. We sat down, we had a conversation. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to know about how I felt about the ministry. Why did I have a change of heart? How did my belief system change? Talking about that particular organization. I told him everything that we had been through, everything that I experienced, moving from city to city, state to state, wherever the church moved, that's where we went. Staying with strangers. It was hard. It was hard on me, but music have always been my saving grace. So I wanted to be the best at it, just to, impress him.
So your father had what position in the church?
He was a minister.
Okay, he was a minister.
Pastor.
A pastor. And he played what instrument?
The saxophone.
He played the saxophone.
Yes.
Who taught you how to play your instrument and why your instrument?
Okay, so you ask questions that's going to lead to other things. So, all right, so I come from a long line of musicians. Mm-hmm. It's in the bloodline. Mm-hmm. Not only my father, but all of his brothers and his sister were all musicians. Mm-hmm. Most of them turned ministers, but they were always musicians. My father's baby brother, Daniel Dillard, played the trombone. Mm-hmm. Uncle Mitchell played the trombone. Uncle Moses played the trombone. Now, everybody I'm naming, Daniel and Moses, Uncle Moses deceased years ago, but he was an award-winning artist, Grammy Awards. He wrote for Teddy Pendergrass, Al Green, and other artists such as that. Had his own record label. That's the business side of who I am today. So I pursued that. I was so in tune with him.
So you heard the sound from your uncle and you wanted to
receive
this trauma.
Yes, but also in the church that we were in, the organization, mm-hmm. Second line jazz was the music that was played, mm-hmm. okay? And it consisted of brass instruments.
Okay.
Some woodwinds. Some of my cousins played woodwind. They played in the church band as well, but mostly brass. And so I was around it. There was no way of getting away from it.
Okay.
But I was inspired by my Uncle Daniel, who toured with Peabo Rice in his whole musical career. And he was also Gladys Knight. He did work with Gladys Knight.
Wow. Yeah. That is awesome. Let's go back to your father.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit how your father shaped you as a man.
Hard.
The man that you are today. You are a man of excellence. You are a humble man. And you carry your gift very well. How did his influence shape your life?
You know, it's hard to talk about Pop because just lost him last year, COVID. He always told me, remain humble, to be giving to others. I saw him doing that all the time, forsaking himself. Up until his untimely demise, he was doing the same thing. But that's what he taught me, to be humble, take life punches, absorb it, do not take anything for granted, and everything happens for a reason. He always taught me, a lot of kids, they said, parents taught me right from wrong. He just didn't teach me right from wrong. He taught me lessons in life. You know what I mean? Not, don't do that. That's not right. No, why isn't it right? that type of thing. You know what I mean? So that's how he shaped me. He and my mother, they did a, I think they did a great job. But sometimes I wonder, because I really didn't think I was worthy of being on the show. First of all, it's the title. I never see myself being brilliant or black. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, you are brilliant and you are black.
Okay.
So we're gonna continue on. You are both. And so he shaped you well. Thank Who you. Else had a positive influence in your life?
My mother.
Shaping you as a man.
My mother.
Okay.
My mother, I don't think she mind me saying this. I don't know if she tapped into the Zoom or whatever, but she was a tomboy. So when Dad wasn't around, he was traveling with the ministry, mom wrestled with me until I could beat her, and she quit. And she just made sure that I stayed on the male perspective of life, being a responsible male, knowing how to treat people like you would want them to be treated. One thing she always said is that two heads is better than one. She also said that people's not going to treat you the way you always treat them. Mm-hmm. And as a young kid, I didn't understand that. But as I got older, yeah, we ran into that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to accept it. Mm-hmm. But I went back to mom and she explained it to me. Mm-hmm. You know, grain of salt. Mm-hmm. Life goes on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Don't spend a lot of time on things you can't change. Mm-hmm. And so I passed that down to my kids. Mm-hmm. But I have to, and my grandmother, her mother, I spent a lot of time with her. She, for a long time, was the only parent that knew me, like who I really am. I camouflage a lot of things with jokes. I'm a joker. I like to laugh. It's therapeutic. But my grandmother knew a side of me that was spiritual. And I don't talk about it a lot. Because people don't get it. Most people don't get it. Mm-hmm. I'm very in tune with the universe. Mm-hmm. My grandmother always told my mother, my father, that I was different. Mm-hmm. That's Shari, something that right there, he's strange. He's a different. Mm-hmm. But it's because of the conversations I had with her. And it wasn't always questions. I would say, gee, I called my grandmother, gee, this right here happened. And I saw it. And 2 days later, it would happen. On her, I guess they call it deathbed, before she transitioned to the ancestors, she told everybody to clear the room and call me in. Mm-hmm. And she just wanted me to put her at ease. Mm-hmm. I did. And it was hard. It was very, very hard. She was like mother to me. Mm-hmm. But those three are the ones that really had a big hand. It was more, but those three, my mother, my father, my grandmother, my mom, they shaped me into who I am today.
Let's talk a little bit about something that most people may not know about. And I was hesitant about adding this to the interview, but I added it because I think that it will help many people that may be struggling in this area. We're going to talk a little bit about your childhood. And we're going to talk a little bit about mental illness. Tell me a little bit about what happened to you as a young boy.
So,
just as much as you want to share.
So, as a kid, as I mentioned, we moved around a lot. Once my father stopped playing music, he became a minister, then he became a pastor. Okay. I mentioned briefly about staying with strangers. They were people that were in ministry, but they were in different states that we hadn't been in, different cities that we hadn't been in. And we always had to stay with a family or an individual until that could get us our own place. There was a lot of things that happened in some of those places that my parents didn't know about. until I told him. I told my dad in that conversation I told you about, I just mentioned. He had no idea. He broke out in tears when I told him, but I had to assure that it wasn't his fault. Like, he's following his passion and his destiny to be a minister and take care of a flock. You know, wherever the bishops they move or the council, he moved. He went, but he uprooted all of us and took us with him. So I can only remember being in two schools my entire life, more than 2 years. That's what kept moving. That was hard.
Yeah.
Peer pressure was hard. Bullying was hard.
Yes.
Yeah. So some of those things that happened with some of those homes had young adults, if not teenagers, living in those homes. They introduced excuse me, not sure about my sisters because we just never talked about it. They introduced me to a whole lot of things.
How old were you at this point?
I mean, this is all the way to the 11th, 10th grade.
But it started at what?
It started at
middle school, elementary?
No,
middle?
Elementary. Started at elementary.
Okay.
Fourth grade, maybe fifth.
Okay.
Humans have a tendency to suppress things that cause us trauma. Mm-hmm. So that's the things I can remember and some I cannot recollect. But I'm sure it was elementary.
Mm-hmm.
Things, smoking, sex, language, gang signs, mm-hmm. all kind of stuff. Yeah.
So at this point, what was going on in your mind that made you call out for help?
I didn't.
Okay, so what happened?
So
how did you get the help that you needed?
It wasn't until I was much older. I learned to deal with it, just like most people.
And what did you learn to deal with it? Tell us a little bit about it.
Stay away from it.
What is the what?
The what?
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
What is the what you're telling us to stay away from?
All of it. Anything that was not taught to me, that everything that was taught to me that was moral, that I saw that was immoral, I did everything I can to stay away from it, and I was silent. You understand? I was an introvert.
Mm-hmm.
Music brought me out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I keep forgetting how old I am. I was going to say 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Nah. 30 years ago, I would not be up here talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
I would turn you down. No, not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
No, because I have so much to say, but when you're going through things, we tend to, like I say, shy away from talking about it and just you stomach it and life goes on. You just try to get through it the best way you can. This world is cruel, man. And people are cruel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about what you're talking about, it takes me back to a lot of peer pressure, bullying, a lot of fights I got into. The thing is, I wouldn't even fight unless somebody messed with my sisters. If they came towards me, most of the time I wouldn't fight. I just wouldn't. I would freeze up. But if you mess with my family, yeah, you might get a brick.
So let's go back to the diagnosis.
Yeah.
So when did that occur?
That was in my early 20s, between 22 and 25.
So was there a cry out for help, or did something occur that you needed to get help?
Yeah, something occurred. I broke down.
Okay.
I couldn't take it no more. I felt like, you withhold stuff, you hold it in, hold it in, hold it in, all of a sudden just pow, you explode. I exploded. I exploded. And I knew it was time to, one or two things going to happen. Either I was going to take my own life, or I'm going to try to get help. And the only thing that helped me to go get help is I kept thinking, I told you my parents taught me not to be a selfish person. I kept thinking, how's my sisters going to feel? How my mom going to feel? How my dad going to feel? How's that going to make you proud? If I take the easy way out, no, let me try talking to someone. Like,
So did you go to your parents at this point, or did you go? So what was the process of you getting help?
One day I was on the secular job. And on my way home, I drove myself to a mental hospital. And I mean, I didn't know why I had this insight of seeing things before it happened. I didn't know how I could hear music above my head and what I was supposed to do with it. At the time, I was not the artist, but I it. But when I got there, they wouldn't take me. And I threatened them, and I told them that if you don't take me, I'll be on the news tonight. They reevaluated, took me in. I was there for 2 weeks, and nobody knew where I was. I mean, no contact. I didn't want to be bothered. I was in my shell. I was safe. But in that place is where I started hearing the music even more. There was a courtyard. I would get up every morning and I would go to that courtyard. And the birds would be communicating, whatever, singing, people say singing. And I just took in life. I just took in a deep breath. I took in who I really am, and at the end of 2 weeks, I just accepted it. And I'm like, I don't care who don't understand me. I know I'm here for a reason, because I would have been taken out a long time ago. And then when I called my mom, told her where I was, she was of course worried. She told Dad I was okay. Him being a man of faith, I don't think he was worried at all. You know, he just prayed that I'd be okay. But I called and told him that I was okay. I got back on the horse and kept riding.
Okay. The reason we're going to transition, because I know this is hard. The reason why we wanted to share this part is to help others that may be struggling. We know for men, it's hard to speak about this and to tell others about this. What would be your wisdom to someone that is facing a decision as you had to face at that point? What would be the wisdom to them?
I talk to a lot of young adults that somehow they're led to my path, and they cross my path. I look at it as an opportunity to share that wisdom. I just let them know, I know exactly what you're going through. I know what you're feeling. You have to find your Musa. But you have to be comfortable with yourself. Don't allow others to judge you, and then it takes you out of yourself, your purpose, your connection, right? And then talk to someone. Don't wait till it explodes. See, a lot of us, when I say us, people that have gone through this, and it's a lot, just so we don't talk about it. Like you said, especially women, we don't talk about it. But we're holding it because it's culture. It's a culture thing to just shut up, be a man, suck it up, you know? But sooner or later, it's going to come out the wrong way. So find someone that you trust, like I found my chief, and spoke with her about it, and all the other stuff came out, and it would lead to some depression. But it wasn't until I decided I'm going to be me. I'm not trying to be him or him, this artist, that artist, not trying to be my dad, not trying to be my uncle, whatever Yahweh's put on my heart to do, and it crossed my path to do it, I'm going to seize the moment.
How do you manage love now? How do you balance your life out? Do you ever surpass the mental illness, or is it always with you? And if it's always with you, how do you balance it?
First of all, I don't own it.
Okay.
I will not own it. Second, I meditate a lot. Anywhere, everywhere. We could be having a conversation right now, and I hear everything you're saying, but I'm not here. It keeps me sane. That's how I'm able to still sit here after you had touched some areas I didn't know you were going to touch on. I'm glad you did, because it's all about helping others now. Music. Melodic therapy is just not something I come up with. It's not just a song that I wrote years ago. It's what has kept me stable. When I'm performing, I'm entertaining. When I'm entertaining, I am receiving therapy as I am giving therapy. It's not just for them. Like, I'm laughing now because my mind just going crazy, but sound men that have their own sound, and I don't have my own sound, I know how it's supposed to sound. It has to sound like that dream I had when I was first told to step out, take a leap on faith and do this. Mm-hmm. If it don't sound right, mm-hmm. I can't feel it. If I don't feel it, mm-hmm. you don't feel it. Mm-hmm. So I'll take that very personal. When I can get into music, I can get into meditation. I'm unstoppable because it's not me. It is not who you're looking at right now. Everybody, you're looking, you're not, you don't even see me. They don't see me. You don't see me. You're getting remnants of it because you're asking the right questions, and I agreed to answer them because it doesn't matter anymore. I am who I am.
The music. How does the music take you to another place? How does the music take you to another place? How do you find peace with your music?
Sound. All sound operates on a frequency, different frequencies, mm-hmm. the higher and the other lower decibels. I get lost in that frequency. If you rock, it's a wave. Sound is coming from the speaker, but it's going out. But it's a wave that's invisible. I hop my behind on that wave and I get to where I need to go, and it gives me peace. I ride with it, ride or die. You know.
I'm gonna ask you something. When you're performing, I can remember your last performance, and this was at the All Black Affair.
Right.
And you went down on your knees. And when you went down on your knees, there was something that was happening to you that was not a part of something that was rehearsed. I could tell that there was something spiritually happening to you and that you were in a different zone. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You're correct. It was not planned. I'm not a showman. I'm an entertainer, but when we get to a certain level in performance, it becomes worship. That was total submission. That's what that was. Hadn't planned to do it. I thought about the song. Title of that song is We Are One. I wish that we all could be one and be kind to one another, help one another to succeed. So when I'm at that moment, that's all I saw. I saw people dancing. I saw people clapping. I saw people videoing, taking pictures. And I'm like, if they could only see what I see, if they could only see through these lenses, and it would be a beautiful thing. When I can't get that to happen by the means of my own power, I just submit. And that's what happened that night.
Yeah, and it was a major uniting. It was a major event.
Thank you.
And I could tell that you were different. This is my intro, and I guess I got a little nervous as well, and I didn't go to script. but I became a follower of yours first. I think I met you at Rex's establishment, his restaurant at Seafood Boil. You were doing a free concert.
Right.
And that's when I met you. And I had never heard of you or your music. And I love the sound. And so I wanted to follow you. And I became a follower of you. Thank you. Everywhere you went, I was there.
Yeah, you've been there. Thank you.
And I knew there was something different about you. I didn't know what it was, but I knew there was something different about you. Then I started to talk to you more. And I knew that there was something different about Buff Dillard. And you became my friend. And we started to prepare for this interview. And this interview is just a side note of, I think, what we share and the person that you are. I don't know if you can see what we see, but you are a brilliant man because you have been designed that way by God. He's designed you and gifted you this way. And he did it for this reason. And you share that with us. And we follow you because of what you share with us. And it's just not your music. It's everything else that you share. And I knew that I had to share you with the world, regardless to what happened to you at a tender age, you know, what happened traveling around with your father, whatever happened, remember, he says, all things work together for our good, for them that are called according to his purpose. This is his purpose for your life. It is all worked together for your good. And you're in this position today because of him.
I totally believe that. Because of experiences that have happened in my life, trying to walk away from it several times. I guess I can say the enemy, but I know it's something that has been chasing me and been after me. And sometimes in my sleep, I see it, I don't talk about it, but I know what it is. That's when I know I'm on the right track.
You're on the right track, Buff. You're on the right track. So, how did a young man tell me? We're going to talk a little bit about your music.
Let me see what you got.
How did a young man come from a little small town of Greenville, South Carolina?
That's right.
And enter into a big city called Philadelphia. How in the world did that happen?
That ministry, like you said, it was purposed. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it at the time. My father pastored became a minister in Greenville while I was born. Mm-hmm. Me and my kid sister. And then he was moved to Anderson, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. From Anderson, South Carolina, I think it was 2.5 years, moved to Darien, Georgia, mm-hmm. place nobody had ever heard of. But you have Darien, that was snakes and bears, but anyway, we were down there for 3.5 years. Okay. And then he was moved to Charlotte. Mm-hmm. And we were in Charlotte 7.5 years, almost 8 years, mm-hmm. which put me in the 10th grade, and then we moved to Philly. Did not want to go. I thought Charlotte was going to be it. All my friends were here. You know, we was here long enough to make a lot of friends. Church, school, neighborhood. And then we got moved, and that was the saddest day of my life at that time because I had to leave my dog. He couldn't go with us.
Aww, but anyway, dog.
Yeah, his name was Robert.
So how did you end up in the Philadelphia All Jazz Academy? And you got to talk real quick.
All right. So, we can't talk about Robert.
No, we can't talk about Robert.
Robert was a white German Shepherd. I'm good. Like a wolf. So, when I moved to Philly, yes, I don't know if I can remember this. Yeah, we moved to Philly. The ministry moved to Philly. So, it was culture shock. It was crazy. It was the big city was crazy. It took about a year to get used to it. No yellow buses, getting on, going to school, all that kind of good stuff. I walked 2 miles to school, 2 miles home. Snow, it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so when I was up there, like I went up, I was playing football. I decided I was gonna play football, play football 4 years. And then I went musician, right? And they had everything. I was a drummer first, mm-hmm. It wasn't a trombone. Mm-hmm. Then I was a bassist. I played the upright bass mm-hmm. in the orchestra. They had all the bass players, they had five drummers, you know, all this. So I didn't know what to do. One day I'm in the classroom, class gets started late and I'm in there, I pick up the trombone. I've been playing trombone since I was five. I play the trombone, the music instructor comes in, Bill Whitaker, and he's like, Diller, you never told me you could play trombone. I said, yeah, I've been playing since I was five, but I've been sitting in the back of his band classroom for about, doing nothing. They had to, I was actually doing nothing. And once he found out, he said, well, I need you to play on Philadelphia All-City Jazz. In Academy. And I said, what is that? He said, it's the best out of the inner city schools. He just didn't teach at Martin Luther King. He taught at some other schools. So I said, yeah, but I can't read. He said, forget that. I'm gonna point at you and I want you to do exactly what she was just doing.
Wow.
So he said he would teach me, but he didn't teach me a lot. He taught me the scales. And I did that. The next thing I know, I was in the newspaper and on television.
And we are gonna take a break.
Cha-cha.
Melissa Johnson is a certified life coach, author, speaker, and creator of WOW Ministries, Worship Over Worry, designed to give you the tools needed to live a life of purpose. You have a choice daily to worry about your life and give up the fight or decide to worship God through your pain and triumph victoriously. Melissa Johnson offers a variety of books, curriculums, and programs to guide you through a self-discovery journey.
Book your consultation with Melissa Johnson today at wowministriesllc.com.
Join Jennifer Noelle Taylor on the hit show Quantum Touch Radio, supercharging your life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll take a quantum journey as well as reveal powerful yet simple steps to create more abundance, better health, emotional and mental vibrancy, and happier relationships using universal quantum touch principles. For more information, visit QuantumTouch.com.
Consider follow through in five stages. First, the vision. Describe the goal and strategy. Second, feasibility. Find out if there are constraints. Third, planning. Lay out a plan and a timetable with target dates. Fourth, action. Do the steps required to get to the finish line. And fifth, completion. Tie up any loose ends. Most people are more comfortable with either planning or doing. Strong planners may hyper-focus on planning and never get to the action. Impatient doers jump straight into action, but can get derailed if they didn't plan for contingencies. Realizing your tendencies, you can determine where your follow-through falls short. Learn the strategies that will keep you on track in my podcast, ADHD Self-Mastery, Customized Strategies for Your Unique Brain.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Talk about something that's dear to your heart. Let's talk about your music. Buff Dillard music. Why the tribone? The trombone. Why the trombone?
It was a challenge. Mm-hmm. Again, it was the main instrument in the church organization I was raised in, but my uncles inspired me very much so by being award-winning musicians. Mm-hmm. So that's why the trombone.
Now, I am so curious about the sound that comes out of that instrument. Can you share with us, how does the sound come out of that instrument? I just don't understand how it comes out of that instrument and sound like the record that I hear on the radio. Please explain.
So, first of all, to make the sound in any brass instrument, you have to buzz your lips into the mouthpiece, and that's what projects the tone and the sound. The different keys, the different variety of sound is the slide, and the muscles, the armature, the muscles in your jaws help to create a human voice sound. And that's what I focus on pretty much all my life. I wanted to, there are thousands of millions of great trombone players out there, but what I heard that actually was the key to producing Buff Dylan music and this bone jazz, it was in a dream. So like I said, the hardest thing is a sound check for me, because it has to sound like I heard it in my dream. But yeah, so that's where the sound comes from.
So how long does it take you to perfect the sound? Once you decide that you want to play this particular piece, how long does it take for you to make it sound like the original?
Like if I heard a song right now, and then how long would it take me to
play
it?
Like We Are One. How long did it take you to perfect that song?
It gets
so it
easier.
It sounds like We Are One.
It gets easier. The more, the like I've been playing since I was five. Mm-hmm. Of course, elementary age or whatever, it was hard. Mm-hmm. Because it didn't have the right tone. I like for the trombone to sound like a human voice. It's been said, written, I don't know about proven, that the sax is the closest instrument to the human voice, which is why it's so popular. Well, my dad wouldn't let me touch his sax. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a couple of knocks upside the head to try and get it out of the closet, but I wanted to play the sax. But since I couldn't, I just tried to make the trombone sound like, attractive. Mm-hmm. Because it's a bass instrument. It's a bass clef instrument. The way I play it, it wasn't created to be played that way, as a lead instrument. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing, just marketing that, you're not going to get it every day. So a lot of people just want a different aura, a different sound. It's smooth, and it's not hard on the ears.
Now, you have played with the best of the best. So I want to share this with our audience today. It's noted that you have worked with Grammy Award-winning artists and producers such as Pastor John P. Key, Helen Baylor, the Williams Brothers. You also opened up for the biggest names in smooth jazz, such as Boney James, hello Boney James, mm-hmm. Alex Bunyan, did I say that right?
Bunyan,
Walter Beasley, Kim Walters, and others. How did this happen? What door was open for you to walk through?
Oh, Yahweh. Mm-hmm. That's how it happened. That was it. The right place, the right time, the right people crossed my path. I want to give a shout out right now. We call it a shout out, but credit to Tammy Green, who was a very, very important, intricate part in my career as a professional. Tammy had faith in me. We lost her last week. She transitioned. Yeah. And she was responsible for bringing all those people in jazz to the Carolinas. She put me in festivals, Low Country Festival, Queen City Festivals, Jazz Festivals, the Theater, Knights Theater, you name it, she had me there, Halton. And so, y'all put her in my path, and she heard something that was magnetizing.
Yes.
And she reached out, and we found out that we have very close ties. I didn't know of her, but she was from Philly as well. In fact, our schools were rival schools. She went to Germantown. I went to Martin Luther King. And her brother went to King, and he was one of the drummers that was playing the drums where I couldn't get in, Howard. And so there's a tie there, but we didn't know when the music attracted her. Rest in peace.
And so you're just not a local artist from Charlotte and around the Charlotte area. You have played different states. Have you played all around the world?
Not physically.
Okay.
My music is international.
Okay.
It is getting airplay in Africa, Japan, the UK. I'm trying to think where else. Canada. We have fans all around the world. I have not toured or did any spot dates. It's not something I'm pursuing. Mm-hmm. I'm the kind of person that if things cross my path and it drops in my lap, I'll take on the challenge. I'll do it, but it has to be meant to be. I don't want my hands in it. Mm-hmm. That's a unique thing about me. But the music is worldwide.
This is his latest CD, Born to Bone Jazz. It's available all around.
All around.
All around the world. What inspired you to write this? Did you write all of the original tunes to this CD?
Yes. I remember I got 8 projects. This is the latest one.
I may not have all 8.
You might.
But this one is extremely, extremely good. My best song, my favorite song is Love Is Real. And so how did you sit down and come up with this particular CD?
So that is a baby that was almost aborted because I had started writing in the pandemic. Everybody was writing. Mm-hmm. All musicians, every artist, they was like, oh, they're going to call this out COVID album. I wouldn't call it nothing no COVID album. I had a lot of time. I don't want to give that thing no credit. But I had a lot of time on my hands. And I was hearing music. I was in the house. I was not really getting out. And I wasn't doing any shows. So called a good friend of mine, Micah Blanding, in Columbia area, down in South Carolina. And when I'm down in that area, he puts the band together. He's my MD in that area, music director. And I said, hey, dude, look, I want to get some of this stuff out. I want to publish it. It's driving me crazy. He said, well, send it to me. So I sent it to him, we worked on it, and we contacted some other musicians to do some other parts, intricate parts. I did all the vocals on it. With these crazy sinuses I sang. And I stopped because I lost contact. I lost contact with the music. Like, I still had a connection with the universe. I still had a connection with the energy, but I didn't hear anything anymore. There was a good reason for it. And it's my mother and father were struck by COVID. And they entered the COVID unit at one time together. And it was my father first and then my mother. And I lost all focus. I just felt like my world was crumbling right before me and I didn't know what to do, but I was always the one that was, hey, take care of the kids, take care of the family. Now I'm like, oh God, what am I going to do? Mom B, that she came out and she inspired me to continue. Buff, you got to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. At the time the next song up was Love Is Real. And so I took that energy and meditating hard about my father coming out. What I saw, what I heard, I didn't like it, but I had to release it. But I used that energy. I knew he wasn't coming out. I knew. I just knew. I saw it. So I used that energy and put it into that song. And that's what that song is actually about. At a low point in my life, I was all alone. All hope was gone. But then I heard his name in a song. Now I know love is real.
Absolutely. And what is next? What is next for the Bone Jazz?
Well, I'm going to leave here and I'm going to go get a steak and probably some ale. No, I'm just kidding.
It relates to your music.
Oh. We misrouted. we're going to talk about that, though. I am straight up like full time in music for the second time in my lifetime. And it's not something I wanted to do. I was pushed into it. So to answer your question, we have some shows that are coming up because of C19. I started doing solo performances.
Okay.
I absolutely hated solo performances because it's my energy, but I like connecting with my band. Mm-hmm. And it all balling up the one ball of fire energy and then presenting it, and then it bounce off the bands and come back and it exhilarates, right? It's
right.
Become the superhero. I become Mr. That's who Mr. Bone Jazz is, by the way. Yeah, when I'm up here, like, right, he's not here.
He's not.
No. He's not.
Okay.
So, I'm so serious right now, but I sound crazy. But so we're gonna do some solo performances. We got some shows that's lined up. You guys have to stay tuned to the website that's on the banner back there, buffdillard.crd.co. And the Facebook, and you'll see the flyers. That's the best way to find out.
So let me ask this question in closing.
Okay.
Legacy. What legacy do you want to leave when you're gone? What is that legacy you want to leave?
So to me, legacy is broad. Break that down for me, right?
As it relates to your music, as it relates to the young people that's coming up, the ones that are following after you, what do you want to leave and to impart in their life?
I want them to understand that it's okay to be you. Mm-hmm. Do that. And anybody that's not with it, is this a clean show?
It's a clean show.
Okay, forget them. Because at the end of the day, you know, when I'm speaking to people, you know, one thing, we come into this world alone. We doggone sure don't leave alone, right? So make every moment that you live count by being kind, helping someone, but never get lost in who you are while doing that.
Absolutely.
That's the legacy. Music-wise, I want the music to be played eons from now, and people still get that feeling of comfort and relaxation and therapeutic melodic therapy.
And we would like to thank Mr. Buff Dillard and the Buff Dillard Music for this wonderful interview. To learn more about Buff Dillard, you can go to buffdillard.crd.com. You can also .co. You can also follow him on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok, Buff Dillard Music. Thank you, Buff, for this opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And this has been Melissa Johnson of Wow Ministry with the Brilliant Black Man Show, featuring the one and only Bone Jazz himself, Mr. Buff Dillard. And have a wow kind of day.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning into The Brilliant Black Man Show with Melissa Johnson on the TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information and to watch any of the past inspiring interviews of the BBM shows, you can follow the tour at The Brilliant Black Man Show on YouTube or WowMinistriesLLC.com. These successful men's stories are worth sharing with the world. WOW Ministries, inspiring the world with The Brilliant Black Man Show.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.